Now, the Paralympic Games are being held in Tokyo. They're running through September 5th. Wisconsin will be represented by 7 athletes competing in archery, paratriathlon, wheelchair rugby, wheelchair basketball, and swimming. This year, the Paralympic Games have got more attention on them than before, with NBC broadcasting primetime coverage for the first time ever. Here's a listen to the call of some of the U.S. women's wheelchair basketball squad in a game against China, which the U.S. ultimately lost in a nail-biter by just 1 point.
Zerbrug rattles in the 3-ball.
Connects from NBA range, puts the U.S. within 3. Beautiful hit from Lindsay Zerbrug.
We are talking now about the Paralympics, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching the Paralympics? What's been your favorite sport to watch? Do you participate in adaptive sports yourself, or does someone in your family? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Megan Hart is a sports reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio based in Green Bay. Megan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I want to hear some about the athletes representing the USA, and we have a big Wisconsin presence in the sport of wheelchair basketball. Can you start us off there, please?
Sure, yeah. So actually a third of the U.S. men's wheelchair basketball team hails from Wisconsin. There's John Boy from Milton. He's making his Paralympic debut in Tokyo. Nate Hines, who is a 3-time Paralympian from Cedar Grove. He won gold in Rio and bronze in London. Jake Williams from Milwaukee, who also won gold in Rio. And then Matt Lesbronze, who is at his second Paralympics. He was at the 2008 Games, and now he is back with the U.S. men's wheelchair basketball team. And they are going to play Spain in a semifinal later this week. They beat Turkey in the quarterfinal. So those guys are still in medal contention.
And people might be asking, why is Wisconsin so prominently represented in this sport? And the answer is UW-Whitewater. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. UW-Whitewater has one of the most successful wheelchair basketball programs in the country. They've actually won 16 national titles for the men and 3 for the women, and the men's program has been around a lot longer. But they have a real history of success that goes beyond just those players that happen to be from Wisconsin. There's also Lindsay Zerbrug, who is in the highlight you just played. She is a native of Oregon, but played at UW-Whitewater on the women's wheelchair basketball team. And then there's also Matt Scott, who is from Detroit, and he's a 5-time Paralympian, having won gold in Rio and bronze in London, and he played at UW-Whitewater as well. So they've got a real history in the sport.
And just staying with UW-Whitewater, I understand from your reporting, actually, Megan, these aren't just American players who end up playing. They're drawing people from around the world in some cases.
Right. I talked to the men's head coach, A.J. Messmer, and he said that, they've had so much success as a team because they attract athletes who want to come and work hard and know that by playing at UW-Whitewater, they'll have a chance to reach the Paralympic level. And that includes players from all over the world. So there are players he mentioned on the German and Dutch women's team who played there.
And then Christina Schwab, you mentioned head coach of the UW-Whitewater women's wheelchair basketball team. She is a coaching now in the Paralympics. Can you tell us a little more about her?
Sure. She's had such an exciting career. She's from Dane County originally, and she's a 5-time Paralympian. She actually started her Paralympic journey in track and field back in Sydney, and you can tell what an athlete she is, having then transitioned and played four more Paralympics on the wheelchair basketball team, having actually won gold in 2004, 2008, and 2016. And like you said, she's now the women's coach at UW-Whitewater, but her former coach took over the men's team and asked her, because he just had such success working with her in the past, to come and be on the men's coaching staff. So she is making history as the first woman to coach on the U.S. men's wheelchair basketball staff.
We're talking to WPR sports reporter Megan Hart about the Paralympics going on now in Tokyo and Wisconsin's delegation there. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you are following the Paralympics, if you are a fan or current or former member of the UW-Whitewater wheelchair basketball teams, call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Wheelchair basketball, not the only game in town. Megan, let's visit in with some of the other athletes now. An archer, Leah Coriel, who I understand competed today.
Right. Leah's from La Crosse. She competes in a discipline, an archery discipline called W1. She's actually the first U.S. woman ever to qualify for the Paralympics in that discipline. And she made her Olympic debut back in Rio at age 51. She finished fourth in a team event there and seventh in the individual event. And she competed today, and she finished fourth in the individual event. But she's just, you know, like so many Olympic and Paralympic athletes, just has such an incredible story. She's an Army veteran, and she last year actually was hospitalized multiple times with complications from COVID-19, but has just come back so strong, not only competing and making a medal run at these Paralympics, but also winning her first gold medal at an international competition this year and the 2021 Pan American Championships in Mexico.
And then we've got the para triathlon event and Haley Danz of Wisconsin. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Haley is from Wauwatosa. She now lives out in Colorado Springs and is an avid athlete, so she enjoys downhill skiing out there now. But she's competed at her second Paralympics in Tokyo, winning her second silver medal in the para triathlon. And she finished second to her teammate, Alyssa Seeley. So two Americans on top of the podium, and they're actually training partners. So it was an exciting day for them on Saturday when they had that race. And she's won 6 world championship medals in the triathlon and just has had an incredible career as one of the elite athletes in the sport.
And then wheelchair rugby, and you talked to Joe Delgrave, who is participating, I think, for the second time in the Paralympic Games.
Yeah, I talked to Joe just before he left. He is lives out in Holman. He's from Prairie du Chien, and he competed in London where his wheelchair rugby team won bronze, and he didn't make the team in Tokyo. And so when I talked to him, he mentioned, you know, it was really kind of hard this time around. His oldest son was 6 months old in 2012 when he was in London, and his son Braxton was at those games, but of course doesn't remember anything from them. And he said now all three of his kids are old enough to kind of understand the significance of you know, watching him compete at the Paralympics. And unfortunately, because of restrictions with the pandemic, they weren't able to get out to Tokyo. But so that was hard kind of in the lead up to the games. But when I talked to him just before he left, he said he was just really excited. And that team actually, he was co-captain and they went on to win silver. So now he has not only the bronze from London, but the silver from Tokyo.
Now we're taking a look at the past, present, and future of adaptive sports and the Paralympics. It goes back to post-World War II America when doctors realized disabled veterans could benefit from physical activity. Adaptive sports have come a long way since then, with the first Paralympics taking place in 1960 in Rome. But some athletes say there's still a long way to go. Some Paralympians say they haven't received the support they need to be able to travel and compete in the games. Kara Ayers is Associate Director and an Assistant Professor at the University of Cincinnati's Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. Kara is a Paralympian swimmer who competed in the 2004 Games in Athens. Kara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk about this topic.
Well, first, can you share your personal story, your experience in the 2004 Games?
Yeah, definitely. So I was a swimmer, and it was my first large international competition. I was 24, so was sort of, in the middle, if not on the older end of, at that time, of Paralympians, and swam alongside one of the historic Paralympians, Jessica Long, who has captured the gold medal more than once again, and she was 12 at the time. So yeah, it was definitely a life-changing experience, and I swam for another year after that for world champs, and then kind of pursued my education and life after that.
Now this year we have some primetime coverage of the Paralympics. How have the games changed since you participated in the early 2000s?
Oh my gosh, it's been so much fun to watch the Paralympics on the big screen TV this year, you know, turn it on for my kids. And it's really been the first time I think that they've connected, you know, what I did before they were born. And they're able to see this alongside other sports events that we watch, you know, as a family. And that's really the first time that there's been this level of coverage. It's so exciting for my family back home when they wanted to watch me in Athens. Of course, there was a time difference to consider, which there still is with Tokyo. But, you know, they could only tune in to a really choppy, broken kind of live stream. They were, you know, happy to do it to cheer me on, but it's changed so much. I'm so excited that so many people can see the Paralympics here.
What does the prominence of the Paralympics mean for adaptive sports for people with disabilities around the country who may not have their eyes on Olympic level competition?
Yeah, it just opens up so many avenues, not only to exercise and make connections. You know, there's even research that connects participation in adapted sports to better employment outcomes for people with disabilities. So for us, you know, we get all the benefits of sports that non-disabled individuals would. But I think it also, the Paralympics and adapted sports also offer not only entertainment and just excitement for non-disabled spectators, but if you haven't seen the games, I just encourage you to tune in. You know, usually the competition is just super close. The adaptations are, you know, what you might not have considered. There's so much creativity. And so really, it's got something to offer for everybody.
Now, I have heard concerns from some athletes and others about accessibility to the games. For example, Becca Myers, a three-time Paralympic gold medalist, withdrew from the swimming team, the U.S. team this year, because she wouldn't be allowed to travel with her mother because of COVID restrictions. Becca, deaf and blind, relies on her mother to travel to competitions. What do you think that tells us about, the missing story of accessibility to the Paralympics?
Yeah. Becca's story really touched me. And, you know, I hope you've been able to hear how passionate I am about the Paralympics and about Team USA. And I really think this is an area that we need to grow and improve. You know, athletes, I lived at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center for months before I competed, and I had access to top-notch everything. I mean, dietitians, sports psychologists. And so really, for the U.S. delegation to be falling behind in their approach to supporting athletes is disappointing, and is not only holding us back, you know, in this case, in portrayals in the media, but also, I have no doubt, on the medal stand. You know, some of the story around Becca has been questioning whether her mother should be allowed to go and kind of that relationship. But what's important to note is that when you have a disability and you're on the world stage competing, you know, at your peak athletic moment, you want the best supports possible, whether that be the best trainer, the best massage therapist. And so it really can't just be anyone who will step in and help you if you absolutely need it. It should be a person of your choosing that can meet your unique disability related needs. And you know, I know COVID added stressors to the game, but I can't help but notice, you know, a number of individuals from those giving out medals to, you know, those supporting athletes in other ways that somehow were able to attend and be a part of the delegation.
Do you see the problem being a lack of resources being put into the Paralympics, financial resources in particular, or is there a mindset where people just aren't connecting the dots here, or is a little bit of both?
I really think the mindset is more at play here. We have this idea that, you know, athleticism negates disability, or that these two things can't exist together. And that's just not the case. Unfortunately, I think there is some ableism within the, you know, Paralympic approach in this case. And we have to understand that just because someone needs some supports doesn't make them, you know, any less of an athlete or an employee or a parent or, you know, whatever their role may be. And so I really wish that it would be approached in the same way that we approach supporting athletes with the best of the best, so that, you know, really they can reach their top performance.
I've had a lot of conversations with people from various disabilities communities making the case that, hey, if you are trying to come up with policies that accommodate us, that's great. Why not bring us to the table and we can help you figure out what's going to help us? Is that part of the story here, where Paralympic athletes need to be at the table to help figure out some of these things?
Totally. Yeah. There's an important mantra within our disability community that's nothing about us without us. And I think this is the case here, that I hope that some of the planners and leaders at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee will look back on this and reflect that no doubt we've had a successful game, but I'm sure other stories will emerge of athletes that struggled with their disability due to, you know, lacking supports. And it's also unfair to some of the people who pick up this slack. So I've seen it cited in stories that coaches are expected to provide disability related supports. You know, that's really not their role or background. And while it's great that teammates often help each other as teammates, it shouldn't come down to that, because, you know, what can and what has happened per the reports of athletes is that there have been moments where, you know, someone hasn't remembered, or they haven't been able to find some help in this informal way. And, you know, it's resulted in people being lost and people being, you know, anxious and nervous, and just things that shouldn't happen when you're getting ready to compete for your country.
We're talking to Kara Ayers, assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati and a former Paralympian swimmer. We're looking at the Paralympic Games going on right now, how they've changed over the years, where there's room for improvement in the future. And Kara, I know you work as part of your job with parents who have disabilities, families dealing with disabilities issues. Staying with the sports theme, though, where do you see opportunities for growth and improvement in accessibility to adaptive sports?
Yeah, I think, getting the word out about adapted sports is something that the Paralympics can trigger for a lot of people. I've seen more dialogue around people saying, you know, wow, have you seen this sport called goalball, which is kind of like soccer for blind athletes? And so, part of it is awareness and visibility of adapted sports. Also, we just need our community to become more inclusive and accessible overall. So I love the uptick in, you know, accessible and inclusive playgrounds so that our family, both myself and my husband use wheelchairs and we have three kids. And so we want to be able to go to sports fields and parks. And, you know, we go to my daughter's softball games and really enjoy that sports culture as disabled adults. And so part of it comes down to community accessibility and inclusion as well.
Who needs to take the lead at the local level to make sure that that soccer sideline is accessible, just the baseline kind of stuff like that?
Yeah. I've seen great work done by, you know, some city councils, some mayors have picked it up as initiatives, as well as, you know, Parks Board. It's also been a great opportunity for different philanthropic organizations who, want to find really impactful ways to spend grant money is to renovate or update playgrounds or parks. Really makes a huge difference in these communities. And just remembering that people with disabilities, you know, we are a part of every spectrum. So a lot of times we think about these playgrounds for the kids in wheelchairs, which of course they benefit. But like my family, it also benefits the parents with disabilities who come to play with their kids and grandparents who come to play with their kids and their grandkids. So it really is impactful across the community and anyone can get involved in this at any level.
Focused a lot on the community level and the organizational level. Can you speak to people out there or parents out there who might be dealing with disabilities themselves and athletics hasn't been on their radar? They think, well, the athletic world isn't built for me. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I think that you might be surprised, you know, if you think about what your interests are, especially, I mean, we saw on the Olympic stage how it's really widened. You know, I enjoyed watching skateboarding and other sports. So I think they may be surprised if they look at what their interests are, that it may fit into, you know, if it's not adapted sports, adapted recreation for sure. And of course, it varies, you know, region by region. Some people who want really specific adapted sports with other athletes with disabilities do end up driving a bit to get those programs. But many people also integrate into their, you know, typical or non-disabled sports programs, whether at their schools or in their communities. And that absolutely can be a way to get involved as well.
In just our last minute, of course, we're still in the midst of the 2020 games, technically the 2020 games now. What are you hoping has changed by 2024 in Paris for the Paralympics?
Oh, great question. Thinking about kind of our hope for the future. My hope would be that we figure out how to match our support of athletes related to their disabilities in the same way that we do these multiple other components. So, you know, we've recognized the increased importance, I think, of mental health and of diet and of, you know, different innovative training plans. And so I hope that disability supports are considered with that same kind of microscope of innovation so that we can reach excellence. You know, in a lot of ways, Team USA is trying to catch up with other countries in the Paralympics, and this is a way that we can do that.
We'll leave it there. Kara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Kara Ayers is the Associate Director and an Assistant Professor at the University of Cincinnati's University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. Kara is a Paralympian swimmer who competed in the 2004 Games in Athens. We also heard from our own Megan Hart, WPR sports reporter, about the Wisconsin representation in Team USA in the Tokyo Games right now. You can read more of her reporting over at WPR.org.